or an effect is something that has not been fleshed out well. There's an abundance of data that suggests that it is a result of capitalism, particularly more modern neoliberalism and globalization, development projects, et cetera, in areas where leading peasant populations to have to rely on increased population rate in order to even maintain the resources that they need to survive.
And the control of women. If you read absolutely. Sylvia Federici's book, mm-hmm. The Caliban of the Witch, is brilliant analysis of that.
It's absolutely the reason that the caller might think it's a taboo subject is because oftentimes it is fuel for pre-existing sort of latent notions of sexism and racism that particularly place blame on women of color for not just maintaining their breeding rate or whatever you want to say, quote unquote. Okay. So I do think it's like, if you're going to talk about overpopulation, you should acknowledge that you are entering a territory where which allows for a lot of growth of things like racism or sexism, to take hold of that discussion. If you're not talking about the economic systems and the social forces at play, you're not really doing anyone any good. I also will note the sake of it that I do have a vasectomy, so I do care about these issues, but it's not as if that I think that that sort of thing works. Also, there is an abundance of data from China that does indicate that government regulations have not done a great job in maintaining.
Thanks for sharing, though. Anyway.
Yeah, Justin and I we're actually both very proud of our award that we have from the Voluntary Human Extinction Program for our vasectomies.
Oh my gosh!
On that note, I would like to let everybody know that it is coming on 9:01 in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, and this is a community radio. And if you haven't heard us before, thank you for tuning in. And if you're a regular listener, we appreciate your tuning in, whether it's by terrestrial radio, which I hope, because God, I love radio. I know the younger generation tends to be more into, you know, listening by podcast or on the internet. And that's good, too. But this is a special two-hour show of my regular Wednesday talk radio program. My name is Paul Roland, and I have three guests in the studio who have kindly offered to spend these 2 hours with me. And we are talking about resistance ecology. The conference is coming up this weekend, and there's an event Friday night, which we'll mention again. And we haven't mentioned the Facebook page and the website, but we will do that. But first, we have Lauren Regan on the line. Hello, Lauren.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm not sure I can top the vasectomy talk.
Well, you haven't had an operation?
I will take the fifth.
Okay. Well, let's get off that topic. So, Lauren, I had actually, it would have been really nice to play. I listened to the talk you did last year or the year before on the corporations, you and Ryan Harper and Will Potter, just an amazing panel. And it would have been cool to hear that and then hear like updates. But since when we talked on the phone yesterday, you had mentioned that those are basically subjects that you wanted to talk about anyway, attacks on animal rights activists by corporations and kind of industrial spying. So maybe you could just sort of talk a little bit about what's been going on in that area.
Sure. So ALEC stands for the American Legislative Exchange Council, for those that don't know about them. They are one of the largest corporate lobbying organizations in the country. And Oregon is actually the third largest recipient of ALEC money in the country. Only California and Arizona receive more ALEC money in the legislatures than Oregon does. And around the country, one of the things that ALEC is probably most infamous for, they get together with their corporate members. You know, the corporations pay large amounts of money to be members of ALEC, and they sit around a table and they draft what is called model legislation. And these are basically template bills that then they shop around to primarily state legislatures. They basically say, hey, we'll give you $10,000 for your reelection campaign if you push our bill through your state legislature. And the bills have to do with all sorts of things, you know, rollbacks of worker rights and environmental safeguards, But they also have a lot of members that are working on things like pharmaceuticals, tobacco, cosmetics, all sorts of industries that use a large amount of animal experimentation. It also includes factory farms and just a lot of the industries that animal rights activists focus upon. And so there have been an abundance of these types of model bills that have been shopped around the country over the last few years that are specifically targeting animal activism in general. I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with ag gag laws, which are basically laws that are put into place to criminalize activities like taking photographs of factory farms from the public sidewalks, for instance. They've also sponsored laws like the Federal Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act that basically makes it a federal crime of terrorism to hinder the profits of an animal enterprise if you cross state lines, if you use interstate commerce. And of course, the internet in and of itself is a way to cross state lines. So, if someone initiates a boycott campaign against a factory farm and uses the internet to publicize it, that technically could fall within the gamut of the AETA, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And these types of laws are taking place primarily in the central region of the country where a lot of the factory farming is taking the most impact, but they're occurring all over the country, including in Oregon. And basically, June 18th, I'm actually going to be up in Portland giving a workshop on ALEC at the First Unitarian Church.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Great.
It's called ALEC Exposed. And so if people are, interested in ALEC, they should come to that. But, in addition to ALEC, we're just generally seeing a growth of corporate repression against activists just across the board. In addition to the industries paying for legislation and getting these laws passed to criminalize activism and dissent, we're also seeing these corporations using slap suits, which are strategic lawsuits against public participation. There's currently a case going on in the state of Washington where some animal rights activists have been engaged in a campaign to try and stop the expansion of the University of Washington animal laboratories. And because that campaign has been effective in causing a lot of attention to be drawn toward this lab, the construction company was targeted as a tertiary target of the construction, and that construction company has just filed a slap suit against one of the activists, who also happens to be one of my law clerks, who is about to become a lawyer. So out of all of the activists that were involved in this campaign, the corporation specifically targeted the future lawyer, and we're in the midst of appealing that case, and it's sort of ongoing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that this weekend as well. But the historic record for animal rights slap suits are mostly that the movement has won against these corporations. However, the corporations, that have tons of money and all sorts of lawyers, they know that just by filing these lawsuits, these frivolous attempts at censorship, they know that that causes a lot of stress. It causes financial impact to the campaign. It causes some of the activists to be diverted from the campaign in order to focus on lawsuits. And so all of these types of tactics are being used against activist campaigns, but it hasn't slowed the activists down at all. Sooner or later, these corporations are going to figure out that they're actually wasting their money, because despite all of their attempts to curtail this type of activism, animal rights campaigns and the successes of those campaigns are only growing and have actually grown exponentially since in the last decade.
So Lauren, let me just interrupt you there briefly. I had said in the previous hour, I had said you were with the Civil Liberties Defense Center. I forgot to mention that. And I'd like you to, you know, just talk a little bit about that. But we do have a caller. So maybe we could just go to that first caller because maybe they want to engage directly with you. Hello.
Hello. Hi. This is Sunny. And what an important discussion. Thank you all for your work and effort. It looks like there are quite a few people that are determined to make the world as cold and ugly a place as quickly as possible, as they can on both the ecological and the personal judicial level. When I was listening to Democracy Now!, some of the cases there pertaining to people that are penned up for 30 years at a time with solitary confinement, and how hard it is to get to a fair judge in Louisiana. So you folks may still have a battle ahead of you in that you can make your case, but what if you get a crooked judge? So, and that's why I refer you to an important book, which is available on Amazon, called, it's called Ritual America, Pertaining to the Force of Secret Societies Within Police Unions and Elsewhere Throughout the Culture. And I think in that way, individuals are compelled, whether they're in the legislature or a bad cop or somewhere else, to do things against their own conscience, things that they don't necessarily want to do, but because they're bound by secret societies and oaths, this is how the job gets done.
Sunny,
it's available on Amazon, and so maybe we can take a look at what really drives people to make decisions against their fellow neighbors. Okay. Ritual America. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I just wanted to. We only have Lauren for a brief time. I was hoping we could engage directly with her with a question, but that's good. Ritual America. That's some actually I would like to look into. It's an important discussion of kind of these. You know, there's a lot of in Europe. I know when I lived in Italy, there's a lot of police who are actively involved or relatively secretly involved in fascist groups. And I think similar things might well be true here. Certainly these police unions act as fraternal organizations to protect their own interests. So they're, in a sense, like sort of secret brotherhoods themselves. Anyway, interesting discussion. But Lauren, back to talk about Civil Liberties Defense Center a little bit. What is the work that you all do?
Sure. Well, we provide legal support to progressive social change movements and activists around the country. We have done a lot of focused work on animal rights, environmental, and climate justice movements. We provide Know Your Rights trainings, free activist representation when people get arrested. We defend activists when they become targets of slap suits or other types of government repression. And then we sue the government, primarily the FBI and police departments, when they violate people's constitutional rights by, either utilizing excessive force or illegal spying.
And you will be at the conference. What will you be talking about this weekend?
We are doing a two-part Know Your Rights training on Saturday morning. The first part is going to basically be talking about how people can engage with the police in a safe manner and what to expect if you engage in activism where you might end up getting arrested. And then the second part is going to talk about security culture and computer security, as well as slap suits and some other topics related to that. And then later on in the day, activist Jonathan Paul and I and Amanda Shemkes are doing a panel on resistance and repression, talking about the history of government and corporate intervention against animal rights activists since the 1980s in the United States, and how the movement has fought back and triumphed over all of those different impacts that the government has attempted to throw at us.
Mm-hmm. So, and Jonathan Paul might be calling in a little bit later. I really encourage people that to listen to the full audio or look at the video, actually, I will have the audio available at some point of the talk you and Ryan and Will Potter did at, was that last year or the year before?
The first year.
It was the first year, 2013, about a really expanded version of what you're talking about now. And you give a lot of really good warnings to activists how to negotiate the terrain that you're talking about in how you conduct, how one conducts one's campaign to avoid some of these potential problems. And you go more into depth into sort of the what these slap suits are all about and other forms of repression that are going on. And again, so you guys, what's the website?
It's resistanceecology.org.
www.resistanceecology.org.
Yes. And there's a link to that, whatever, whoever has curates that that video. I forget the name of that.
Yeah, all of the videos are online at burningheartsmedia.com.
Burningheartsmedia.
I think it's .com, I should say.
Yeah.
They're also available on our previous Facebook page events for previous conferences. So our Facebook page is facebook.com/resistanceecologyconference.
With Lauren on the phone, I just want to add, you know, as an activist, I have been for about 15 years. Civil Liberties Defense Center and Lauren and all the supporters of CLDC are an amazing, invaluable resource. I cannot count how many times just being an activist and having representation or somebody to call when there was those really difficult legal questions to navigate were answered by either Lauren or somebody representing CLDC as well. So anyone, any callers or listeners out there, CLDC is a place you should be giving your money. And I'm adamant about that.
Shameless plug Thanks. There for you, Lauren.
Thanks. Yeah, well, one other thing I will add, you know, I didn't necessarily get to hear the entire beginning, but I kind of caught the gist that, you know, one of the things that I'd like to stress about this conference this weekend is that it's not just for animal rights activists. You know, the animal rights movement, as well as the environmental movement, have been really intentional over the last several years to network and draw attention to the intersections between different movements. And the CLDC, you know, is one of those linchpins in that type of network. You know, we work with a lot of indigenous communities, we work with communities of color, we work with radical activist communities, GLBT, because, you know, from my line of work, one of the central issues that all of these movements and communities deal with the same is police misconduct, government repression, and just, you know, dealing with the day-to-day life of being targeted or harassed because of either your political beliefs or the color of your skin. So I really believe that there's a lot more that unites us than divides us as activists. And this conference, you know, the Know Your Rights trainings that we're giving and the other discussions are not meant to be preaching to the choir. You know, it's not meant to just be talking to animal rights activists. We really encourage and want activists of all stripes to come and meet us, and let's find common ground and ways to build a stronger mass movement that can actually take and engage power against these corporations and the corrupt governments that are beholden to them.
Indeed, indeed. Lauren, we really appreciate your taking the time. I know you got lots of appointments. You said you have an interesting appointment coming up at 10. Probably don't want to go into that.
Yeah, I'm actually off to the FBI office to pick up all of the property that was seized in Portland 15 years ago when the ELF press office was raided.
Oh, no
way.
Oh,
wow. That'll be interesting.
The FBI is finally giving us... Yeah, so I'm going to go pick up a bunch of 15-year-old computers and typewriters and other things like that.
Oh, wow.
Vintage. Well, I hope there's some, there are probably some interesting, you know, some interesting documents and stuff too, I guess.
Well, stay tuned for that. Yeah, okay. I will let Leslie and Craig Rosebrough talk to you all about that later.
Fair enough. Yeah, any last thoughts before we let you go?
Well, if you can't make it to the conference this weekend, you know, the CLDC website does have a bunch of Know Your Rights materials, and our videos are up there. I really encourage people to learn their rights so that they are, you know, empowered and confident to get out on the streets and speak their mind.
All right. Thank you so much, Lauren Regan. We really appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Bye, Lauren.
And again, that was Lauren Regan with the Civil Liberties Defense Center. My name is Paul Rowland. Usually I'm just between 8 and 9. I'm overstepping my boundaries this morning and taking an extra hour. Political Perspectives, AM News and Public Affairs Director Kathleen Stevenson is back in Pennsylvania taking care of some family stuff. And so there's a, usually she fills these gaps in the schedule herself. There was one that opened up for this time slot, and I was asked by our other News and Public Affairs Director, Jenka Soderberg, if I wanted to take this on. So I decided to do this two-hour special all about resistance ecology, which is really cool. It's nice to have a little more space to step out and talk a little more depth. God, we have three callers on the phone. Oh my goodness. One of them might be, we've got some people waiting to talk who are gonna be presenting at the conference. So let's see who this one is. Who we got there, Kristen?
No, this is Harry.
Okay, hello. Hi, Barry, you said?
Harry.
Harry, go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Very interesting topic. And I had a question for Ms. Regan, but she left the phone.
Oh,
but maybe
sorry about
the rest
that.
Of you can answer it. What I remember about ALEC was 10 to 15 years ago, Oprah Winfrey was sued because she had one of her shows mentioned about how hamburger was made and how beef and how cattle was raised and treated. And she was sued by the Cattlemen's Association of Texas, even though Oprah Winfrey's show came from Chicago. And Oprah Winfrey won the lawsuit, but I was wondering how all these laws that Alex is doing, how come none of them have reached the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on any of them?
Well, there is a question. I don't think you have any legal experts able to address that. I mean, I think we could all speculate. I don't know why no one's taken on those laws to force them to the highest level. I don't know if that's happened. Lauren would have actually been a good person to answer
that. For that.
Oh well, sorry about that, Harry. That would have been really interesting to hear.
I will say, I think most ALEC laws are state level laws. And so I think a lot of folks are just not aware that they're on the books, that there are sort of just various forms of model legislation that get passed from state to state. And unless you're kind of actively engaged in challenging them, then, you know, if there's not a lot of awareness around the particular laws, is, you know, you don't see that get pushed to the highest court. On a federal level, I mean, there have been a lot of challenges to the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, which is an ALEC legislation. But getting stuff to the Supreme Court, I think, is probably a bit more difficult than social movements would really want. There's a lot of resources involved in that. If there's not a lot of support for the organizations like CLDC or CCR that are kind of spearheading a lot of those efforts, then there's not, you know, much that lawyers can do if the movement's not sort of self-aware about these issues and then propping up as much support that they can financially, because the legal challenges are very expensive.
So, but Harry, I will try to actually, you've sparked my interest, and I'll see if I can actually find out something about that and maybe ask Lauren. You can also go to the conference this weekend at Portland State University, Smith Hall. I guess he's gone, but thanks for calling. You can go to the conference and you can meet Lauren yourself and ask her directly. Would probably be the best way.
Yep.
Let's go to our next caller. Francis, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I had a question for Lauren also, but some of your guests may know the answer. I was wondering when she mentioned that Alex was involved in Oregon, I wondered what types of legislation and which corporations were involved in the Alex movement in Oregon.
Well, Monsanto,
Does
for
anybody
one.
Anybody know?
Monsanto, the Monsanto, with the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, was Alex, for sure.
What about the prison industry? Because I'd be curious to know. I remember Kevin Mannix.
Well, yeah, the private prisons. Oh. Yeah, not. I don't think there are any in Oregon private prisons. But
I mean, as far as legislation, such as Measure 11, which kind of
That's a good question.
Minimums and all of this. And Kevin Mannix just seemed to be a very strong proponent of that, and it really did just fill the prisons up. And I'm wondering how much, if Alex was involved in that at all. I've been trying to wrap my head around listening to your conversation for the last hour, and Lauren kind of addressed it, where other movements could come and find common ground. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to... I'm very involved in human rights and human rights violations in our country, and I'm trying to see how this movement, and maybe with the common ground discussions and everything, will prevent things that happen, like such as what happened to Freddie Gray, where he was brutally killed. Brutally. Mm-hmm. I mean, how this movement, it seems like it's an aside to me. Forgive me for saying that, but it's like it isn't addressing directly. And maybe if we do.
Well, it's an aside
directly,
to what?
If we aside to the human life in our country that's being destroyed every day.
Well, let
what
these
and,
guys.
And I thought what my question is how, okay, maybe if we address the corporations and the fact that they're not people. And that they are allowed to promote these kinds of inhumane activities in our country, maybe that's the way to go.
Well, let's let our guests have a crack at that.
Just to back up a little bit, we all just received messages from Lauren stating she's still listening to the show. So thanks, Lauren.
We could have had her on, but she wasn't getting any calls. And I figured, anyway, go ahead.
But she mentioned that the Oprah case was actually settled and couldn't be appealed up the ladder. So it couldn't actually take it to this. It could actually be taken to the Supreme Court because there wasn't any conflict to take it to that level. Also, as far as for the callers that are interested in looking more specifically into the American Legislative Exchange Council and what the laws are that they've written, there is a really great website called Alec Exposed. Do you have the website for that?
Just look up Alec Exposed.
Alec Exposed. In fact, actually, here in Portland, during Occupy Portland, the Portland Action Lab, which organized through Spokes Council model during much of the Occupy Portland era, had a F-29 day of action that specifically targeted Alec. A huge chunk of the organizing that went on, a lot of the information was gained from this Alec Exposed website. And we actually have, I don't know if still, but back then there was Paul Cosgrove who had a direct action civil disobedience in his law office during the F-29 action.
He's the Alec co-chair for the state of Oregon.
Right. Regarding
I do want to, Lauren also mentioned that for people that are interested in Oregon, it is actually heavily focused on the prison industry, the model legislation that they try to push through, according to Lauren herself via text message. So, that information about Oregon is available on Alec Exposed or Alec Watch. Those two things, just look them up if you're interested about more information. Sorry, or email Lauren Regan.
That'll help the caller who just called in.
And on the broader question of, how people people who view animal rights as an aside from more important human rights questions?
I think as animal rights activists, for me personally, I see it as just one more component of a broader social justice movement, and I think it's very important that when we're talking about, this discussion of where things are at the intersections, that, animal rights activists tended to be quite misanthropic. And that in and of itself is quite problematic. And I feel...
Which means anti-human,
right.
Basically.
Yeah. And, you know, that in and of itself has, I mean, I used to be that way.
It's a paradox, though, to be human and anti-human
exactly.
at the same time.
Exactly. And so basically, I think over the years, what myself and many of my peers have kind of discovered is that it's a really insular view to just say, I hate humans for what they do. You know, humans, there's a multitude of reasons why people do what it is that they do. And it's important to understand, at least try and understand why it is where they're coming from.
Are you still there, Francis? Oh, she left us. I was hoping... who's on the line?
Well,
Ginny.
I think it's me, isn't it?
Okay, I guess so. Who's this?
Yeah, Vinny.
Vinny, hi.
The deal, I wanted to talk to Lauren because I'm working on a slap suit case, and I think she may not know that there was a Supreme Court of Washington case that just came down on May 28th.
Uh-huh.
And she's... Maybe her people know about it, but it's pretty early. But the deal is you don't get a lot of the protections of slap suits in the state of Washington. It's been around for about 25 years, but it's Davis versus Cox, and it just went through the Washington State Supreme Court. It was just decided, and it has nothing to do with Alec. It has to do with something that was created in 1890, and it was the Washington State Constitution. And they said that basically the people that are suing have the right to a jury trial. So anyway, that's probably a little bit deep in the weeds for you guys, but these slap suits are still being perfected, the law on them.
I actually... happen to know that Lauren is well aware of that ruling.
About Davis versus Cox?
Yeah, I mean, Lauren is working on a case in Washington that was going to utilize Washington's anti-slap statute, and it was just ruled unconstitutional.
Yeah, so she was working on one that was under 525.
I know she's well aware of that. This is what she says to that. It pertains to the procedural impacts of the Washington anti-slap statute. Yes, it sucks because Washington had a really strong anti-slap statute up until that point.
Right.
I know that her and CLDC work on a wide variety of things in that realm that are not just specific to Alec, and she does keep up to date on that sort of stuff.
The deal is that, you know, these people that sue reporters and stuff like that, reporters of wrongdoing, they also, whether you like it or not, they do in fact have rights. And that's what the Washington State Supreme Court said. I don't necessarily agree with it. But I happen to be working on a slap suit in the Washington Court of Appeals myself.
You were hit with a slap suit?
Well, I don't want to go into it, but we're in the Court of Appeals right now.
Okay.
But it's under a slightly different statute. It's under 510.
Okay, well, this is pretty arcane, I think, to our listeners.
Yeah, well, bottom line is somebody reported pollution that was going into a navigable river of the state of Washington,
mm-hmm.
and the polluter sued the reporter. About the and there were some citizens that got sick, and that's what the reporter is facing, a slap suit.
Well, that does seem to be a trend. You know, there's, you know, I remember there's a doctor up in the tar sands area who was talking about the effects of tar sands. He's actually just talking about the number of people who are sick. And he was like fired from his position. I believe in Pennsylvania there was a doctor who was talking about fracking.
Happens all day long.
Repercussions. And then there's the, you know, anti-whistleblowing culture that's so rampant in D.C. and elsewhere. It's seems to be it'd be interesting.
Yeah, and President Obama he's one of the leaders of it. Him and Hillary.
All right. Well, thank you for calling.
Have a good one.
Okay, Vinny. Appreciate it. Call in anytime. Hopefully we'll have one of our callers who's a speaker at the conference on the line at some point.
I think Eric McDavid will be calling in any minute now.
Looks like we got a note from Kristen, our engineer, saying just that. Eric McDavid is on the line, and a caller pointed out that I shouldn't be broadcasting that someone is out of town for security reasons. Well, okay. That could be the case. If so, I apologize, Kathleen.
Definitely not local.
Anyway, so Eric McDavid, are you with us?
You hear me?
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. I actually didn't get to meet you. You were at a event in at the law conference in Eugene a few months ago, and I guess it was the first time you had been in public with several people. And anyway, maybe I did get to meet you briefly. In any case, hello, welcome to the airwaves in Portland, Oregon, and beyond.
Thank you very much.
And I'd just like to let you just say about how you're feeling for being free from the confines of the prison industrial complex. And I'm sure there's people who don't know your story and would be justifiably shocked when they hear it. So maybe you could just tell us about yourself.
I can touch on the story a little bit. Yeah, sure. And actually, anybody can check out my website, supporteric.org. It's got everything that happened in my case from pretrial motions all the way to the end of the transcripts, the hearing that was actually when I got released on January 8th. Let's see. I got indicted. No, I don't know. I don't know exactly when I got indicted, but I know I got arrested on January 13th of 2006. Arrested with two other individuals, and there was what they call a confidential informant in the case. The short scrub of it, and everyone feel free to check out the entirety of the site. And there's also links through Sacramento Prisoner Support.org, who is my support group and helped me throughout this entire process. So I had an FBI confidential informant that basically from looking at all the story and everything, a lot of people feel that it's a cut and dry entrapment case, to where that individual, without any training or anything with the FBI except for their contacts, procured a place to stay, what they called bomb recipes, which were bomb recipes, and food and everything, and led me along with basically the wishes and hopes playing on my heartstrings, basically. She was a female informant, and led me along all the way up until my arrest over the course of about a year and a half. I took it to trial with an entrapment defense, and that was in September of 2007. So I did 28 months, or in total, after trial and through sentencing, I did 28 months in Sacramento County Jail in isolation there. Let's see, found guilty in September, sentenced in May of 2008. To just shy of 20 years. It was 235 months. And so from there, went to prison and went to Victorville Medium Security 2, did 3.5 years there and then 3 years at Terminal Island, below after I got my points down. Throughout that process, went through the appeals. And so, they have your trial. And then the trial was it was damn near hilarious the entire time. The transcripts of the trial are on my site, too, if anybody cares to read that.
It's a thesis project.
Yeah, if anybody needs a thesis process on the FBI's tactics, there's plenty of documentation there for reference and hilarity. It's kind of sad, but it's still hilarity at this point, definitely.
So, you know, and then just to cut it a little brief, so then you did get out because it actually came to light that there was communications between you and this informant, Anna, that had been kept hidden, right? Is that basically what happened?
That's basically the gist of it. I mean, my support crew got a whole bunch of extra documents through a FOIA request. The first FOIA request we did, like, right at the beginning of trial through my trial lawyer, and they came back and said that they don't have any documents on me, despite giving about 2,000 pages of discovery for the trial. And then we made another FOIA request after sentencing and got those 2,000 pages of discovery that I got during trial, and then, like, about an additional 2,400 pages on top of that, as well as 800 that they said existed, but they couldn't give me. So there's about 3,200 pages roundabout on top of the 2,000 that they gave during for trial, for
okay,
discovery.
I have a quick question that I have to ask you. Is we have someone else on the line, and it's Jonathan Paul. Can you be on the same line with him at the same time?
I don't know if it counts as meeting for real, legally.
Let's not
I don't know
do
if
it.
You should risk
Let's
it.
Let's not
no.
do it. Let's not do it. I don't want to put myself or anyone else in that situation. So
I appreciate it.
Let's ask Jonathan to perhaps call back in about 10 minutes. He should be hearing this if he's on hold.
Jonathan's at work, so he may not be able to get back. But thanks for calling, Jonathan, if you're listening right now.
Yeah,
sorry,
this is awkward. I should have thought about it. Well, I had no
John
way to think about it. So, sorry about that.
Yeah, no, it's all right. So let me... That FOIA request and my support group going through those additional pages that they didn't give us at discovery, there were the correspondences that I cited during trial and pointed at in that discovery, not actually given. And so that was the main issue that came to light and brought about my early release.
So I just got to put this out there. Has any mm-hmm. have people used the term thought crime in connection with your case?
Oh, yeah, extensively, actually.
I mean, you know, I mean, it's like it's almost like archaic or silly at this point, maybe, for people to, like, make these parallels with, you know, like, people who are, like, talking about the Soviet Union as being, you know, a prison state and all this stuff, and the reality that we're actually living in one here in the good old US of A. But I mean, something like that, I know, maybe we just shouldn't be shocked by anything anymore. But when I first heard of it, I mean, as cynical as I can be, and as much as I think I know about things, the fact that a case like yours, and there's other ones like it, got to the point, you know, I mean, not that, like, 6 months would be any better, but I mean, if, like, facing 20 years in prison for, like, saying something, and, you know, they're putting Muslims, you know, Arab Americans in prison for similar things as well, and it's I don't know. Say something about this.
Oh, you're going to throw the ball in my court with that intro.
Well, I don't
no, I see where you're at. No, it's all right. No, I got this. No, I mean, it's basic tactics of, like, of a police state, and that, I mean, they use pressure of, like, threats of, like, there was a case prior to mine in Sacramento with Ryan Lewis, and they pinned him with, like, 60 years. His was more than just a thought crime, but still, it's the same type of pattern. They came at me and my two co-defendants with saying, yeah, you're going to do at least 20 years in prison. And so it was just kind of like, and that's how they, like, they broke and turned state's evidence, one right away, and then one after about eight or nine months of isolation. And saying, basically, yeah, if you sign over, then we're going to let you out. And sure enough, that's what they did. And with Zach getting out, like, basically the day that he signed, and getting time served for her sentencing, and same with Lauren, she got time served. And so with, like, me, like, fighting it and taking it to trial, that's and not like counseling, or I hate to use that term, because, I mean, there's so many different pressures that people end up being exerted to when they get faced with serving, like, 20, 40, 60 years in prison, they have to take in consideration all sorts of stuff, and different people are going to dance with it in different ways. But it was just one of the things that I felt that I couldn't do, and after 9 years, I was released because of that.
So, I don't know how much you can get into this specifically, but you know, there's also a more general question. You know, I've heard of other cases where undercover police, I know in England, have engaged in, you know, I don't know, I don't even want to know what, you know, I'm sure it's a very painful thing for you, and I feel hesitant even to bring it up. It's your own stuff, you know, but it's a public thing, and it's something that other people need to be aware of, and it's something that has happened all too frequently, where, you know, undercover police actually engage in open, you know, actual romantic involvements to the extent of actually fathering children, I understand. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I mean, we should talk about that, because people should be aware that these, you know, these things happen, and to be on your guard. And it's really terrible, you know, to have to be on guard, you know, in intimate relationships. Anyway, but so do you know if there's any legal, you know, has there been any pushback in terms of that practice that you know of?
Not that I know of. I mean, they have full reign in, like, fighting terrorism and in doing anything, like, underneath that type of state-sanctioned action. They're able to do whatever feel is necessary in order to complete their mission, i.e. get paid. And so you just have to, I mean, that's what we get to dance with right now.
Eric, this is Tim, one of the RE organizers. We're super excited you got to come and visit us, along with SAC Prisoner Support. My question for you is, you know, since you're going to be talking about, you know, prisoner support and solidarity, what and how people can be supporting you now that you're out, as well as people that are still in, and just in terms of if there's anything you want to discuss about prisoner support in general.
No, yeah, I mean, there's like a myriad of ways, different ways that folks can support folks on the inside, from like writing letters, I mean, which is one of the most beautiful like experiences that helped nourish me throughout my 9 years of confinement. I mean, just like throwing a couple of bucks on their like commissary accounts, or like just talking to other people about political prisoners in the United States and around the world, and helping to like provide a voice, not for them, but with them on the issues that they're serving time for. And that a number of folks have been in isolation for ever since like the 70s. I mean, they got political prisoners from back then, from the 70s and 80s, that have been doing time. And so just like bringing awareness, and just bringing like, just knowing that like, that they're also like a part of like what you do every day, in like standing against all that's going on around us. And so like now they've got there's events all over the place for June 11th, which is a day of solidarity for long-term anarchist prisoners, NICO prisoners, going and finding like a local event in your town or whatever, or making a local event real quick. It doesn't even matter. Just like getting together and write letters of support and just help out with these folks that are still doing time.
All right. Well, so you're going to be at the conference this weekend, and you'll be talking about prisoner support. And anything else you'll be talking about?
Yeah, I think we have a letter writing for political prisoners. We have one in the morning, I believe, on either Sunday. And then, is it Sunday?
Yeah.
Sweet. And then Sunday afternoon, we're having the general conference, the general like speak on like basically like what happened to me, and like, and also there's going to be somebody there from Portland ABC, Annex Black Cross, that'll be with us on that panel.
All right, and you're with Sacramento Prisoner Support. People can get more information there, and you have your own website, is that right?
Yep, supporteric.org.
Okay, well, you know, because we've got the person you may or may not be able to be on the line with at the same time, going to call back in a minute, or I'm going to have to let you go. But really appreciate your checking in with us, Eric.
Definitely. It's an awesome opportunity. Thank you very much.
All right. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday, and other people can meet you on this weekend at the conference at Portland State University. Thank you, Eric.
Definitely. See you this weekend, Eric.
All right. And so real quick, before we get Jonathan Paul on the line, somebody want to just run down again, like for people who missed it, what resistance ecology is real super quick, and what's going to be happening this weekend? I see y'all pointing each fingers at each other. Someone step up.
Resistance ecology is primarily a conference. It's also a way to organize tours and to create a new framework of how animal liberation activists should engage in strategy campaigns and the community. This upcoming weekend, we have third annual Resistance Ecology Conference, which is going to be taking place primarily at Smith Memorial Union, Portland State University on Saturday and Sunday. There are some off-campus events on Friday night. There's going to be an event with Lauren Ornelas discussing issues surrounding food justice at Matt Dishman Community Center on Russell in Northeast Portland. And on Saturday night, there's a social event. There's also going to be, these are unannounced at the moment, but there's going to be numerous protests going surrounding and in relation to the No New Animal Lab campaign for Portland targets here as well. So there's going to be plenty of time to get rowdy and do protests.
Great. And you heard the voice of Tim, and we also have Justin and Melanie. They are the three of the co-organizers of this year's conference. And Smith Center, Saturday and Sunday at Portland State University on Southwest Broadway and Hall or something like that. Anyway,
the address is 1825 Southwest Broadway.
There you go. If you want to use your GPS to get there or other device.
Anyway, the event is free, by the way, too.
The event is free. Thank you for clarifying that. So this has been a wonderful conversation. We only have 10 minutes left. There's a long list of things that we haven't gotten to. That's often the case. And I had some audio I wanted to play, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk to people live on the air. But I will at some point have up on the KABU website some of the audio from that conference. Just got to get that taken care of. And there is a video of many, many, many of the workshop of the panels, speakers, workshops from the past 2 years, as they said, up at the Resistance Ecology website, Critical Resistance, I was about to say. That's another great group, which I should have on my show sometime. So maybe we have Jonathan Paul, or I don't know if Kristen is listening. Is he on the air yet? Is he on the line? Okay. Well, we'll wait for him to call back. So talk more about where things are headed in Portland. What's how are we going to this? Lots happening with this fossil fuel stuff. Shell No is pretty amazing. There is a lot happening. I don't know if people checked it out. Yesterday, people disrupted the port of Seattle meeting. A lot of people got arrested. There's a bunch of lockdowns that happened. Four separate lockdowns. The Raging Grannies were chained together. I thought that was pretty amazing. It seems like there's some momentum going on around that. Also here in Portland, there's been a lot of activism and a lot of things. That seems like another way for people to work together.
For sure. I think climate justice is sort of an unavoidable necessity in terms of movement work. It's also something we actually tried to get people that are part of the Shell No Action Council to be able to be at the conference, but it's just very busy time for them right now as it is. And Rising Tide has sort of spearheaded a lot of that grassroots stuff, is recently launched their hashtag Flood the System. I don't know if you call it a campaign or a sort of a series of mass actions that they're trying to organize for the fall. So I would just say quickly, just for people that are interested in anything and any sort of concern about animals or human communities, that climate justice issues are definitely one of those intersecting points. And so look into the getting involved in grassroots efforts. The Northwest is definitely at the cusp of things there.
And a Portland Rising Tide seems to be growing and getting more active. I went to an anti-oppression workshop on Saturday. It was very well attended. People are certainly encouraged to check them out. They'll be at the conference. There will be a lot of different tablers also, right, at the conference. Yeah. It'll be a way to get,
absolutely,
get in touch with a lot of groups that aren't necessarily presenting. Some of them will be as well. We do have Jonathan Paul on the line. Hello, Jonathan. Hello?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Sorry about that little legal
no,
issue there.
No, understandable. Been through it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what did you serve time for?
Served time for destruction of a horse slaughterhouse back in 1997. So, long time ago, but yeah, I did 4 years.
So you are someone who's seen, you know, speaking of like the long view of this issue and sort of how the animal rights movement has interacted or not with other movements, how it's changed. You've been involved since the 80s. Maybe just give us, we only have about 5 minutes left, some reflections, some takes on you know, your experience over the years.
Well, I started as an animal rights activist back in the 80s, but I soon became aware of the connection between that and the environment. So I became actively involved in environmental issues too. So, I saw an intricate need to understand the connection that the oppression of animals is also very similar to the oppression onto the environment, and that they are intricately connected, and that, you know, and that other than animals, as most, a lot of animal rights people are seen as protecting domestic animals, but I consider myself an eco-animal activist. So that pretty much pertains to not just domestic animals, but all animals, including, you know, which is would be wildlife and all that. So in order to protect animals, we have to protect the environment. In order to protect ourselves, we have to protect the environment. So it's all a big connection, and I think in some ways, these movements are starting to see that, and that's what this conference coming up is all about. But for a long time, these two movements have not really been able to see or willing to work in both of the issues simultaneously. So that's kind of been my goal, is to kind of blend these two movements and sort of understand the connections and understand that, you know, what you eat affects the environment greatly, and, you know, what you do to animals is very oppressive and causes suffering, and a lot of that stuff has to change.
You know, I have a question for you and our other guests on the, you know, the issue of meat eating, since we touched on that earlier. I've engaged with discussions over the years, in particular with vegans, but other people, on the issue of, like, I don't know, I eat meat once every few weeks, maybe it could be once a week, I could go months without eating meat, I don't feel...
Then maybe you should go forever. I mean, might as well change it. You're almost there. I mean...
Okay, now you see, what I was going to say was, wouldn't it be possibly a more effective approach to get people to potentially drastically cut back and to be very conscious of where their meat is coming from? Because wouldn't that essentially have the same impact? If you had everybody eating meat like I do, I think the meat industry would collapse fairly soon. I mean...
It probably would. At the same time, if you ask people just to do something partly, they may not even go that far. If you ask people to do it all the way, then if they do it partly, it may be better than, you know, than not doing it all. So
I don't know if that's a settled question, though. I think it's something to do, maybe for discussion. I don't know.
But that's where the issue of the ethics come in, you know? It's like, are we still going to sponsor these and allow these slaughterhouses to commit unimaginable cruelty? Are we still going to allow the meat industry to impact the environment the way it does and suck all the water out of the ground and do all that? So I think that, you know, really a plant-based diet is the way to go. And a lot of environmentalists, I know a lot of environmentalists who eat meat. I have a hard time calling them environmentalists.
Well, that brings us back to the...
When you impact the environment like that.
That brings us back to Josh Harper's point, who actually questioned that approach. But unfortunately, we got you at the very tail end of this conversation when it would have been good to have brought you in earlier to, because we just don't have time. But there is a conference coming up this weekend, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. All this and more can be discussed and engaged in. And so I'm glad you brought these things up, and I hope people will come out and we'll continue these conversations. I apologize for only having this short time, Jonathan, but I'm glad we're able to get you on, and thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right. And we have a minute and a half left. I think even asking you to sort of summarize anything would be silly. Just anybody has one last thought or invitation, further invitation for people to get involved?
I just want to say quickly, we really encourage everybody of all walks, not just activists, not just vegans, but everyone that's listening to really come out to this.
And not just environmentalists and not just animal rights activists.
Exactly.
Like we're trying to, you know, we want, you know, people should go to each other's conferences.
Exactly. And we really and invite everybody to step out of their comfort zone and really just listen and hopefully learn something from this weekend. And we'll be excited to meet you there.
Okay, and we got to get out of here because Air Cascadia is up in 30 seconds, so we got to vacate this room. I really appreciate y'all coming. Again, Melanie, Justin, and Tim, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right, appreciate it. All right, and thank you for listening. This is KBOO Portland. My name is Paul Rowan. This has been extended 2-hour version of Wednesday Talk Radio. See you next week.
All right, you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 10 a.m. Please stay tuned for Air Cascadia. After that, Flashpoints. After that at 11, it's The Dirt Bag with host Glenn Anderson. Thank you so much. Stay tuned.
It is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers, since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 40.